Good morning and welcome back to the Explicit Measures Podcast with Tommy, Seth, and Mike.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Jumping in with our main topic today. So our main topic for today will be why one person can't do everything in the data space. Well, more just in data, right? So if you have data, why one person shouldn't do all the things. I think this is going to be a relevant article because I think a lot of times companies expect so much out of that one person. Oh, if I'll just hire this one person, they can do everything in Fabric. All the data engineering, all the modeling, all the report building.
All the things.
All the things.
And this is an article written by Christopher Laubenthal on Nightingale.
It's good. We've done the website a few times with their articles.
The Journal of the Data Visualization Society, I guess.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
So it's a good article. We're going to go through that one. But before we jump in there, we'll do a couple quick news items or openers here as well. So one of the first news items I'll throw out here just really quick is if you're not going to the Microsoft Fabric Conference, that is now a thing. So there's a Fabric Conference that is coming up in Las Vegas, March 26th to 28th is the actual event. You can also get workshops on the 24th, 25th, and 29th. And we'd recommend you go. It's actually good. I think you can go to AzureConf or FabricConf.com or AzureDataConference.com. I think either one of those will work. And then if you'd like $100 off your ticket, you can get $100 off by using Carlo100 for $100 off your tickets.
I would love $100 off my ticket.
I would love $100.
It's $300 from me.
Listen to our show to know that.
Discounts.
The Benjamins are flowing towards you guys. And
Mike, you're speaking there, right?
I'm speaking in two sessions.
Oh,
nice.
So I'll have two sessions I'll be speaking in. So those will be two that you can bring your pillow to and take a nice nap during my sessions.
I'm actually getting closer to going to the conference now. I'm like, you know what? That would be fun.
Yeah, it's going to be good, I think. In a lot of many Microsoft things, it's a lot of salesy things. It's a lot of like, you know, stuff that's going on. But we're going to do some deeper dives on some best practices or things that work well in how to manage your Spark instance is one of my sessions. Ooh, nice. The other one we'll be talking about Azure Data Factory and pipelines and Azure Data Flows Gen 2, some of the new things that are coming out there as well. So just kind of more investments in learning or teaching or educating people around what is inside Fabric, which should be great. Looking forward to it. Tommy, you had a kind of another opener topic here. You just want to go through. It's not really data related, but it's interesting.
It's a bit off the wall. So this is our podcast before the Super Bowl, and Patrick Mahomes is being in it, and he's, you know, there's that comparison of
him Taylor Swift is in the Super Bowl. What you might just say
he's in it, something like that. I've heard. So, but there's a comparison of him being the GOAT compared to Tom Brady. GOAT meaning greatest of all time.
Okay.
Now, outside of football, actually, I was listening to something, and it raises the question: who's the greater movie GOAT? Tom Hanks or Tom Cruise? And at first I thought I knew this right off the bat, but as I thought about it more, I'm at a loss.
So this is your opener?
This is my opener, yes.
All right, you're gonna make us publicly choose between
Tom Hanks actors. Or who's the greater GOAT?
What if I think somebody else is a greater actor?
Yeah, I think Seth was thinking Nicolas Cage, I believe.
Well, let's say in the generation of 88 to 2004.
How can he get away from that accent?
Yes, the accent's great. But what else did he do? You can't say he's a better GOAT. Let's say for the sake of today, for the context, Tom Cruise or
next,
Tom Hanks?
Next time we are filtering your
Okay.
Okay.
I mean, of the two, I mean, I like both of them. They're both very great actors. Of the type of movies they create, I think I like the Tom Cruise movies better. Mission Impossibles, I think, are really, they're a staple. I like those. I think those are good.
I'm going to go in the opposite direction, only because when I was growing up, Big was one of my favorite movies.
Oh, Big. Yeah. I never really got into that one.
In different types of roles, Tom Hanks, man. Like, I think just the breadth of characters that he's played.
Didn't he do that one about the airplanes and never leaving the airport or something?
The terminal.
The terminal?
Not the best accent. Good movie, but not the best accent.
Good movie.
The terminal. He's been in a lot of war stuff. He's also behind.
I don't do war movies. I can't do war movies. I get too emotionally.
Like Masters of the Air, which is the new version coming out. There's a lot. I'm going to have to throw my hat into Tom Hanks.
And that's where I originally was. So this is where the context changed for me. After Catch Me If You Can, when you actually look at what Tom Hanks did, not really some of the greater films compared to Tom Cruise. He had 10 movies in a row where he made $100 million. Where
the movie, yeah, but that's like what an actor makes is a completely different. Like, well, who's the GOAT? Are you asking who we think the favorite is based on criteria? Like, if it's
who's the GOAT?
I like the best.
Okay,
then that's I will say than based on criteria of how much they made, how many movies they've had, how popular they are. Like, I don't know, right? Yeah. Like, I am also the guy who likes to watch movies, and 99% of the time do not remember the actors that were in them. Like the face, right? Yeah. Like, oh yeah, I totally recognize that. Oh yeah, that's their name. But I am like, my friends are the complete opposite. They can name every character in all the movies that they've been in all this other stuff. And I'm just not that guy.
Yeah. And I think the perspective is Tom Hanks has that more probably depth of type of acting. Tom Cruise, you go, I'm Tom Cruise. We're going to have a fun time. Stuff's going to get blown up. Have fun with me. Let's go.
But he's also had some different types of roles.
It's true.
But he's played a lot of the special operations or, you know, military kind of things as well.
Yeah, it's a harder conversation.
Less drama. Tom Hanks been more drama than.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Tom Cruise. This is all anecdotal, dude.
I don't know.
We're the wrong folks to be doing film critiquing of acts. But anyway, Tommy, where do you
welcome land? Welcome to your BI and film critique show.
Yeah, right. Have a little fun. It's a Saturday morning for us. We're pre-recording.
Yeah.
We've done 292, mind you, without fail. We've never missed an episode.
So I interrupted. You're now bringing into gross net worth how much money they're making. So you land on the Tom Cruise train.
I'm saying from a GOAT point of view, greatest of all time out of those two. I may like Tom Hanks better as the actor, but I know if I'm getting Tom Cruise in my movie, we're going to do really well.
Okay.
So
I think you can use, I think this is, let me tie this back to data just here a little bit. Right. Right.
Sure.
You can perceive things however you want. Right. You can use data to be as like a proxy for popularity. This is kind of like where, you know, what do you measure as, what is your definition of success? What does it look like? Right. So you can go into, well, how many awards did they win? Well, Tom Hanks won 2 Oscars while Tom Cruise has never won an Oscar. Like, so you can start looking at, like, you know, comparing that kind of things. And so, you know, assumptions are whoever's making the nominations for Oscars, they're looking at who's making good acting choices and who's doing good acting in the films. Then you can look at like box office things as well. So you can say, okay, how in every movie that Tom has been in, what's the cumulative total of all the money that's been returned by him? To your point, Tommy, like if I'm going to put Tom in a movie, will we get a good return on that movie? And, you know, I've also seen some, you know, very short YouTube video clips of like Tom Cruise is like crazy. He does a lot of his own stunts. He loves being that stunt person. So like from a, I'm all in, but he's like a, it's like a, I wouldn't say it's sci-fi movies, but he's more of like action packed movies. That's kind of, and that is a genre that I like more than some of the other genres that are out there. But if you look at that as well, Tom Cruise, I'm looking here, it's got around 10.7 billion is his, and Tom Hanks is, seems like it's, 11.3. They're very close. So like, we're all like 1 billion apart in like who's got the most.
A billion dollars is close.
Well, when you're doing 10 to 11 billion. Billions,
right. Yeah.
Right. When you're talking billions. So I mean, similar there as well. So like, you know, can bring in the money or the revenue. But again, I think you're looking at a lot of these numbers are reflections of how people perceive the popularity of a lot of other things. It's not just you can't put Tom in a movie and be like, oh yeah, Tom is the only thing that counts towards the benefit of that movie.
To an emotional response. And what I should have had Tommy do is define what he meant by GOAT, like in specific measurable things.
It's literally back to implementation.
I failed. Thank you, Tommy.
But so all this said,
all
though,
correlates.
This is, I think, the same kind of challenge you face inside businesses where you have different people looking at the same kind of question. There may be an answer, but the different KPIs you pull out and the different things you look at change your perspective slightly on what the answer may look like.
And then you recognize that all of it was just false completely because you chose two people out of all the men in all of Hollywood to choose between them, saying which one's the GOAT, as opposed to saying who is the GOAT.
Stop doing two Toms was pretty good, though.
It was good. It was good. I'm just saying
it's... You put limitations on it already.
I like the critique.
This feels familiar. This feels familiar. You know, what KPIs you decide. So this really... ultimately, this goes back to OKRs, right? What was our key objective here, right? And you know, what goals did we want to have? Is our goal to get awards? Is our goal to make money? Like, what are we doing here? So
what I'm digging here is you guys are saying, I'm not really digging the visuals that you chose here, Tommy.
Mm-hmm.
The colors here could have been a little better.
Yeah, I think your colors in your report here, Tommy, don't really match the theme of our company. We're not branding correctly here. If you could center the titles a little bit more, and you know, the colors seem not quite right. There's too much color here. Who cares how much what the actual report looks like and what the data is actually showing? But let's critique the report look and feel only. Yeah. Lipstick on a pig. Good intro. Good opener. I liked it. It was a thought-provoking moment, Tommy. But from now on, all your other intros will be screened.
You know what?
You are going to be screened from now on.
Getting this one out, worth it. Worth it. Get this out the door.
Meanwhile, all of you who have actually hung around for the movie podcasting conversation, let's transition into our real topic today, why one person can't do everything in data. Take us off, Seth. Give us a couple like kind of key nuggets here that you're thinking through and on this article.
Well, I'm not going to throw in my thoughts yet.
Okay.
Outline what the article is describing.
That's fine. Give us a little bit of an outline what's going on.
Yeah. So ultimately, the point of the article is how business has a tendency to look at an individual who is creating value with data and assume that because they're successful at doing certain things, that this infinitely scales into all other areas of data, and how that quickly becomes a problem not only for the individual but for the organization as well, not understanding why things aren't getting done when in the past things were. So he lays out kind of an analogy of and the importance of the different roles and kind of people, right, that are skilled in the particular areas of data. And the main areas he talks about are data architects, data engineers, database administrators, data analysts, information designers, and data scientists. So while he doesn't lock all of us into the analogy, because he kind of opens the doors saying, you know, this is just an idea of how you build a college dorm, or, you know, uses this analogy of like how that dorm is built. Et cetera, et cetera. And we can talk through those different components. But ultimately, the point is outlining that it's important for organizations to understand that there are different roles, there are different skill sets, and to be cognizant of those as they're trying to develop solutions. Did I sum that up?
I think that's a very good sum up. I liked the middle part of the article where you kind of touched on, he kind of outlines what he perceives as different groups of skills that potentially you find people not grouping themselves by, but like things that people are interested in. And I like to think of, you know, there are a couple of these skills that people will be interested in and they'll gravitate towards those type of skills, right? I've seen a lot of MVPs kind of gravitate to the data architect, data engineers, database administrators, and maybe some data science activities, right? That those people have, they like the data. They like thinking through the numbers and producing the KPIs, the outputs, the measures, right? That might be a certain skill set. Data analysts, information designers, DBAs, they may be people like that type of work and kind of gravitate towards that space. So yeah, I think this is a good article, and I really like the buckets that he kind of presents here. And I think that's some good talking points.
I have a question right off the bat. We have a wide spectrum of users or you know, people that listen to us. Where I think this kind of issue initially, I guess, impacts people more is more on the business side. That's just my perception. Mm-hmm. How prolific do you think this problem is? Like, because the core thing he's pointing out is someone starts creating value with data in a business, right? Not an organization that's data literate, that's like completely, you know, has all the bells and whistles of the adoption and what we talk about on Tuesdays. It's I would probably say the small, medium, you know, sized businesses or business areas where someone pops up and all of a sudden people realize that data can do good things.
I would maybe say some of these skills are more formally trained, right? So I would say,
I'm just saying, like, the problem, right? Like, the one person, how does that, like, do you think it is? Does the problem he's outlining here live rampantly across organizations?
I think companies don't have a good measure to know what their data culture looks like. And I think inherently at every company, there is a data culture. Whether you like it or not, there's something that's there. And when I look at this from the business, right, there has traditionally been this fight between I'm the business, give me data. And then they reach out to IT or technical experts in the data engineering, database administrators, and maybe even the data architect level and say, okay, we have purchased this computer system to track all of our sales. Well, help me get it out. I don't have the technical training to get the data out of those things, but I do know once you give me a table of data, I can shape it. So I think the data analyst or the business side of things has a way of taking information and try to shape it in a way that helps them make decisions. So I think it's being done. It's usually happening in like Excel and maybe in Access typically. But as that data culture matures and now the technology pieces are giving us more capability to do higher volumes of data and analysis, now we're seeing the data analysts and the business, I think, reaching further upstream into more of those technical roles back into the central BI team or IT or whatever you would want to call it. So I think there's a shift happening where the tooling is giving more capability to users. And as data culture needs to evolve now, the data culture now needs to educate or prepare or have plans to help these data analysts, which are doing great things. They're making decisions on data and figuring out how to run the business. Businesses wouldn't be running if they didn't have any data to support that. What's going on?
I see where you're going with that, Mike, because for me, very similar. The technology is, I think, to me, is prolific like a virus at organizations.
Yeah, it's commoditizing data to some degree.
Well, and this is the difference, because I was thinking, why is one of the article deserves to be written? Why is this such a case? I've experienced this myself and I've heard a ton of others. Well, this is not like back in the day where your skill set was so siloed, where this was like years ago when someone asked a colleague of mine to build an SSRS report and they didn't know SQL, that you had to know the tooling. All the technology is part of a user interface, and this is even more prevalent with Fabric, but let's just go back 7 years as Power BI. To do modeling, visualization, reporting, communication, all I had was a single UI. And my expansive skills is immense, where that was never the case before, really in any, I think, any type of technology, much less just dealing with data. So we've gone this prolific, and I like the word that you use there, Seth, because I think it is so prolific at any organization who's taking this technology, because really, to a degree, one person can do a lot of this.
Yes.
But they can't scale it and they can't do it for long. But you
okay, that's
a 2 days.
That's another part of this question. And I really like where you went with the scaling. And yes, because you're right.
I can achieve a lot of this.
Yes, you can. Once. One person can do it all, but for how long and for what size scale are we talking about? Because there are unicorns and there are people that have a lot of all these skills together. However, I also would argue, the amount of information that is required to know to get to this level where you could do all these things is going to be very hard to find someone who has all of this information.
See, to me, it's the sustainability of it. I think someone could figure it out once, where I had this particular common problem that I figured out and I learned a skill in a certain area.
Yeah.
But can I sustain this one for my own state of mind? Do I have enough hours in the day?
Yeah.
But I was only dealing with one situation. And again, the technology allows us to solve a lot of this at least once in one particular project. But the problem is the assumption. And from what I see from the article, but what I've seen happen in myself is, well, since you've done this, you can obviously solve other data problems and do all the data things because you've done this. Why would we hire anyone else? Because this has been solved. Not understanding the amount of time that took and if it was actually built to actually be long lasting.
And I like the conversation. I think it's jumping more ahead of my question, okay, which is fine, because I think what I want to stress that I fully agree in this article is if something organically is happening where an individual is bringing value to the organization through data, a lot of times that's going to be Excel. Right. It's going to be a tool or something that they know how to do that with. That instantly can change, especially in this new ecosystem where you guys are talking, where there are technical solutions here. There are maturities and capabilities to scale and reach further upstream and like instantly go into the conversations that we usually stick in. But I think what he's pointing out here is these people don't know those things. Like our audience, we love having part of this community because we talk about these things all the time. But in like, if I look at the spectrum of people in organizations that are creating value, how many of them are engaged in communities and, you know, constant learning in tech skills, et cetera, et cetera?
Not as many.
Not as many.
Yeah, I would agree.
Right? So that's where I think I think you guys agree with me, and I think we jumped ahead to like, hey, what you have to do is this next, because the technologies and the tooling, especially in today's day and age, is in a state that you could learn it. It's not this obscure like landscape that you have to completely ramp and like, but you still have to learn, and you still I think automatically get pushed in where this article goes, which is these people know how to bring some value out of data, but what you're asking them to do is be a data engineer, like in the Fabric right. landscape. Great, you can create a report. I heard Microsoft is introducing Fabric. Now I want you to build this whole ecosystem. That's exactly what this article I think is pointing out as is the problem, where you may have somebody that is capable. You might have an idea that they should be able to handle all of this, but that doesn't make them a data engineer. Right. That doesn't make them a big data expert and understand Spark and notebooks and machine learning and all right. these things. Yep. And I think it just reinforces that, like where I'm leaning is, I agree. I think one of the challenges of business in general is to assume that somebody like, and even in the realm that knows Power BI, right? Because we make fun of that in quotes a lot of the times, is I know Power BI. Well, do you? Like the whole spectrum of technologies underneath there. Are you an expert at it? Or are you the person that can like connect to an Excel file and create a report? Wildly different things, right? And that's where we talk about skills, matrices, et cetera, right. et cetera. So I do think what I like 100% agree. I think assuming a lot of individuals, even from a business perspective and or Power BI user perspective, puts people in problem in these situations, where I think this is a very relevant article because of the fact that it's bringing to light there is a lot more under the covers, and how do we communicate that to the business?
The only thing I think, if I'm hearing correctly, that I would slightly disagree with is the idea that, well, this normally happens when you have those unicorns, those superstars who love to learn. To me, even that person who's doing something mm-hmm. simple in Power BI, I think they assume they can do a lot more. And all that makes them is just a master of card building, where there's a lot of houses of cards at the organization. Because that Excel thing, like, well, I must know data engineering because I put this structure together. And yeah, we can intake data and create this automation, so we can really extend that when they've done maybe one or two projects. I don't think this has to be that person who loves data like we do, where that's the prerequisite. I think this happens with, honestly, because of how easy and how transformative Power BI can be, just taking Excel files and making them into reports. I was not even on a call yesterday showcasing all these Excel files, and we were showing how we would build a model from it, connecting to what would be as a standard table, and the amount of wows, and you're, whoa, I never know that we had that. Oh my gosh. And all those wows, that still happens even with Excel files. And what I'm trying to say here. Yeah. So what I'm trying to say is it doesn't take much for the assumption and the load to go onto one person, where it's not because they're doing amazing things in Power BI. All I'm saying, it really takes one or two things for all of a sudden this influx of assumptions of what that person is capable or assumed to be capable of doing. So maybe it's not disagreeing, but I'm taking a different look at this as it does not take much. It's not this gradual process where that transformative effect of the load on a single person or team can occur.
So that is an interesting point, that comparatively, like the opinion of the article, are you disagreeing with to some degree, where like the article is pretty straight out, like you need this person, this person, this person, this person, or this role, this role, this role, and these are not the same things. And you're mm-hmm. saying, well, in today's world, the tool sets would allow somebody to understand these more. And I think that's where you're at, as opposed to disagreeing with me that my opinion from just the individuals that do a thing mm-hmm. are not this, like that group of people. It's a small subset that is going to improve themselves to learn more just because
you're spot on.
Okay.
So, yeah.
So, but I do think you bring an interesting point where do the tool sets of today, and be it Fabric, be it Power BI as a standalone, right? Yeah. Break down some of, you know, what is being pushed at as an individual that does this role in versus like an individual that does the role, right? Can those skills be married or merged or, you know, learned pretty easily because of the tool sets that we have today?
So I want to jump in here. You guys have been talking some really good things, and I want to throw down some analogies here that I think will. Like, this is
throw how down my more analogies.
Yes. My brain runs in Tom analogies. Cruise,
or no, sorry. No,
yes, okay. If Tom had a train that was running south at 45 miles an hour, and Tom Hanks was running a train at north at 50 miles an hour, which way does the smoke blow?
Tom Cruise had a jet.
Yeah, exactly. If Tom Cruise is in his private jet. Just kidding. So I have a couple of notes. This is funny because this literally came up in conversation in my family recently, and we were talking about, you know, different people in our family. We're talking about how they interacted and wrote things down on paper, like writing papers. My son had just recently done a paper through a competition, and actually it wasn't even a paper. It was actually a website. So he actually made like a little website builder, wrote words and paragraphs, and then added images, and then cited all his references, all these things. So he has this whole little mini website that he does, and they apparently they were competing on this. He did it really well. We're very proud of him. But that perspective compared to, let's call it, more seasoned individuals in our family was talking about how would you write a report, and the writing a report a long time ago before computers, it was on a typewriter, and you had to write the report using a typewriter, typing everything out, and if you got the wrong comma or space or period in the wrong spot, or if you were doing references, remember, I don't know if you guys remember this one, but doing references, you had to go to like a library, find the book, go get the pages, and then you had to go look up like the APA formatted standard that you're going to use, and you had to go copy various pieces out of. I remember I got to college, and I was like, you can go to a website, you can literally just Google the book, and it just says, here's the book, tell me what page number it was, and it just spits out the whole reference. So I was like, oh my gosh, this is incredible. So to go from the spectrum of like, we're typewriting things out, you're trying to reference things, the amount of time taken, and my family member was telling me, he would write a whole page, and if he messed up halfway through, you threw out the page and you started over. You started typing again. Could you imagine in Word, if you got through a page and you got halfway through in Word and you're like, whoops, I put the wrong keystroke, you got to delete the whole page and start
out,
over again.
Whiteout. Why do you think Whiteout was?
Whiteout.
Whiteout was, yeah.
Whiteout.
Yes.
Whiteout. So man. You're like over the typewriter.
I know.
Let
yeah,
it,
right. Yeah.
I'll never
let
know.
It dry. Low, let it dry. Go back.
Yes.
Be impatient. Do it too soon. Now the whole page is messed up. Yes.
But think of all, I mean, this is, to me, that analogy fits very well with what we're talking about here with data now, because this is the same thing, right? The effort it took to get data processed and completed and changed and manipulated, it's now only possible with computers. And now that we have computers, we can do all these calculations much faster. There are things that are built in ways that we can use them much quicker. And every new technological advancement here is pushing us further away from like the core of what was being done. And again, I think about computers. Another analogy that goes along with this as well is early computers were nothing but code and cards. The early computers, you had to put a card in, as a punch card to program the computer. We don't do that anymore. The computers are much smaller. We're not using punch cards to program computers anymore. And now we have, you know, base programming languages, and we have multiple layers of programming languages on top of it that make it easier for users to do things. Now you can build Power Apps, basically an application, without even touching most of the code. You can pretty much have it either automatically populate it, and we're getting to this place where we're requiring less and less deep technical knowledge of like where the code and the data and the things live, and because of that, we're making it more accessible to other people. My final analogy here, and again, I'll keep getting my soapbox here. The lake houses that we know today have never been able to be built like that until now. Before, lake houses were all on Hadoop. I would store a bunch of files. I had to manage what was being created. I had to save the data down. There was no ACID transactions inside storing data inside lake houses. It was just very manual. So companies were using it. They were building it. But you had no way of grooming that data and making it easier. Well, Databricks comes along, they produce this Spark thing, it goes much faster, a technological advancement has occurred, and now we have, you know, Delta tables that can handle ACID transactions, that someone has solved these harder problems for us. And so a small group of really smart people have built a new technology thing that has now opened the accessibility of that thing to now hundreds, if not millions of people around the world to use these technologies.
So, I do love the website analogy.
Well, yeah, but all these things. So everything I'm seeing here is, you know, people keep putting smart brains on solving these. What is the most difficult things about data? And it's going to keep getting easier to do. It's going to keep getting easier to run. We're going to have things like, you know, we see these different roles here, right? Yeah, maybe 5-10 years ago, we had more data architects, data engineers, DBAs. Now, what kind of DBA do you need for Power BI? There's maybe some organization, but I feel like a lot of roles have changed now, because I'm not actually worrying about a server anymore. It's those things have shifted to other roles. So I agree. But let me just say, so I feel like what we're going into is these roles are turning more into a melting pot to me, right? The roles were very hard set because there were specific skills needed to do these certain things. I think the technology is reducing the barrier to entry to some of these roles. And I feel like we're seeing a melting pot of this swirling more and more together.
I agree on some aspects. I don't agree on others. I think there is a melting pot related to how people are engaging and working with data.
That's okay, Tom Hanks.
I think where that is a completely different thing is,
yeah,
depending on the structures that you're still using. A DBA is required for a SQL server.
I'm not disagreeing with you.
Managed instance, right? Like, so where data lives, how it's managed, et cetera, I think takes specialized roles if you want those systems to work. What I do agree with you,
yes,
especially from the technology perspective, is things are moving in a direction whereby we don't have to invest in the storage, in the speed of what something like that thing that's serving up the data,
yep,
I think is more and more pushing into realms where you have services, you have,
yes,
you know, services that allow you to only care about the data. And I think over time, those aren't completely independent yet, although it's gotten way, way easier with a lot of these services.
Yes.
I do think, to your point, over time, it completely goes away. Like AI and looking at like how data is being used in a system, you can't tell me you can't automatically re-index, repartition, redo all the things dynamically or on a scheduled basis. You don't need people to do that.
Because
people are going to do it worse than the systems that understand like how to how to serve that up better.
But so again,
I agree from that standpoint. There are technologies now here and in the future that are just going to make it easier so we can focus more on the data itself instead of the infrastructures that are used to build the data.
Oh, I got some problems. So I got some problems.
You know, just to be clear, I want to talk about Seth's real quick comment here.
Okay.
Seth said AI is going to do things. Yes, I know, because I used AI to summarize this article. And so I'm using it more and more for all these. Like I used AI to help me out with Tom Hanks and Tom Cruise. I don't need to be an expert in a lot of things anymore. You can supplement your knowledge much faster now than you ever have before.
I got some important information too, as the status quo AI guy. At the very bottom of my ChatGPT, it says ChatGPT can make mistakes. Consider checking important information. So that's one soapbox.
Okay.
But I really want to focus on the melting pot idea. And I think if we said there's a prolific virus going around on this strain on individual users or teams, the idea of the melting pot is the cause, or that's like the origin of this. Because with all the elements, right? My first job out of college, I worked at a marketing website agency where we would charge an arm and a leg to build websites that were cool but janky. And now I have Squarespace to manage my own website for my own company. That's fine. But the difference is, and this is the big kind of the outlier, it works to a scale, not to scale. It works for me. I don't need to know HTML. I don't need to know all the intricacies of a website because I'm building one for me, for one individual. And that's my original thought here where, I can build a lake house in Fabric and I can do a notebook and I figured out some of those things. But until I know how this works in a pipeline, and I don't mean a data pipeline, I mean in an actual organizational pipeline, when all things are coming at you, there are certain skills that you need to know. And the idea that, because you can do a visual, you are a data visual expert. That is not the case. Because
I'm not saying that. I think you're going a little bit too far on what I'm reading. I think you're reading a bit too far what I'm saying is.
Okay.
I think I understand your point.
Yeah.
My point is less around that. It's more around the commodity aspect of data, engineering of data, and moving around.
Sure.
It's becoming... That's purely my point. I do recognize there needs to be skilled training, skilled thoughts around how do I communicate through data, the visuals. And I would not assume, hey, you've been building Power BI reports for a year. Okay, you're now a visualization expert. That's not necessarily the case because I've been around people who've been, I've been doing Power BI for 2 years. Great. Tell me about filter context. No clue.
Yeah.
Like I know that there's gaps there, but I'm more talking about the idea that if you were going to do visualization development previously, even that by itself, it was either only in Excel or you're doing D3.js and writing everything visuals from scratch. Yeah. Like, and that's why Tableau shows up and Tableau goes, look, we have a way of shaping some SQL queries and letting you drop data fields down to a table or a visual and boom, stuff starts popping out. Again, this is another thing. The whole visualization space has also simplified itself by giving you new tools that let more people access that same information.
So let me rephrase it a bit. I think this will be a little more proper.
Okay.
Just because I'm capable to do a certain solution or capability doesn't mean that should be my requirement or my expectation. And I think that's what occurs. Just because I'm capable to build a pipeline.
See that point. I can see that.
Right. Or capable to build some data engineering in Fabric. Just because I can do it and maybe I'm okay at it doesn't mean automatically that should now be my expectation at the organization or in my primary function.
I disagree with you on that one. Yeah,
okay.
I agree.
Okay.
But I don't think that has nothing to do with my point though. My point is less around that. It's more about, the ease of learning, the ease of accessibility to these things. And so, no longer do I need to write you know, for example, I don't have to write the DAX formula to make the visual run. The right. DAX just happens behind the scenes and Power BI just makes it work. I don't have to write the M code to make the M go grab the data from the data source. I just write the UI. I click on the button. So to me, it's more of the, I still think you need to understand the concepts. There's still some education training that needs to be occurring there. But the ease of clicking on buttons, that's the general trend. The general trend is to make all these very technical aspects more easy to absorb. And that's actually one of my bigger challenges with Microsoft Fabric right now is there's a lot of things that Fabric is doing well, but it's not addressing what I would consider are the main core business problems. Main core business problems is, how do I handle slowly changing dimensions? How do I handle an incremental loading table in a fact table? Like, what in my model, if I throw a bunch of tables at a computer software, how do I understand where should the dimensions and where should the facts live? These are things that people are being applied to do right now. I think Microsoft should take notice and say, okay, we will identify these areas of common, like it's a common problem everyone's trying to solve over and over again. Let's build a UI, let's build a system in place that, you know, handles 90% of that problem for you. So you have to think about it less. I mean, other tools are doing this. Microsoft just hasn't done it yet in Fabric. It will get there, I'm confident. But right now, they're behind other companies and other tools.
So the last real quick I'll say on this, and then I'll jump to Seth, is I think you and I agree, but what the problem, the crux of what you just said is, yes, we still need to know the fundamentals, but to an organization, it's like, oh, well, since the button can do that for you and it can cause that, well, we can put that on you too, because we don't know all those intricacies. We just know that you're capable and it's possible now. So you can figure it out. That's what I see occurring.
I think what's really poignant as you guys are talking is that this article brings up is and accelerates to some degree is because we have tool sets that are opening these doors to individuals. Mm-hmm. I think there are pitfalls here for businesses that actually make this worse. Right. So what Christopher outlines here is, like, he's saying, listen, these are different skill sets. Regardless if it's one person or many, these roles are not interchangeable. And some of them are very specialized, like data architect.
I would agree.
Like that takes a lot.
Yep, you have to know done it before you can actually architect the good decisions.
Same
with DBA, I would say. You need training for DBA.
Yeah, or experience, right?
Or experience, yes.
The analogy he uses is a college room in a remote town wants to grow, but can't because of structural limits. So the first thing that they want to do is build a new student housing. So he walks through and he says, you know, you need a contract, a construction firm to develop a new dorm. Those are the data architects. What are we going to build? Contract movers to populate the dorm, data engineers. Hire a superintendent, manage the dorm, database administrators, hire resident assistants, data analysts, hire communication staff skilled in telling student stories, information designers, contract with researchers to study the impact of these students, data scientists. Okay. And while, like, part of me doesn't like that analogy because it's like, okay, you know, some of these can be shared. We have these new tool sets that allow people to do more. I do think the cautionary thing that's coming out of here is, especially with things like Fabric or even Power BI, and we're talking anecdotally about, like, people and what they can and can't do within here, is is essentially nestled down to, like, this idea. With people who are pushing data and doing things, just because they can make it work doesn't mean that it's built right. And while there's value there, because the business gets insights quicker, I think what's important is the organization needs to understand that what's being built is neither efficient nor performant unless that person has the skill sets or is learning them behind the scenes, because all of those are very important still. These tools aren't, like, creating the best solutions all the time or guiding lay people who don't understand the dynamics of them. What they're doing is allowing them to do something and make it kind of work. So I guess the caution in here is, yes, more and more people have access to these tools. They're getting simpler, but you guys are in business because businesses still struggle with understanding how do we get this throughout the organization? How do we skill people up? What are the things that they need to learn, et cetera, et cetera? And there's a cost there. If you don't invest or can't invest in some of these skill sets, right? And that's, I think, the blessing and the curse with business tools that we have that allow quick wins and allow business units to get data faster than they ever have before. There's a cost there until you start to support that with people who have the skill sets to think long term, to build things that are going to be efficient, so that as you're spending X amount on, you know, licenses and whatnot, that it remains that way for as long as possible. Otherwise, you find yourself in this, like, everybody can do it. The skill set, like, the tools are there. We just expect everybody to do it. And what happens? Your costs explode. And we, Mike, you know this very well because there's a guy who works very closely with you from a previous org. And what happened? Boom, like, just like massive explosion in cost. Because why? Because people without the skills were doing things and they were making it work, but it wasn't efficient. And correct. I think that's the cautionary tale in here is like, yeah, I mean, the small college remote town, you know, could grow. Could they do that by, you know, slapping in a bunch of temporary housing and then assuming that that's going to work and everybody's going to be happy with that? For a while, but eventually, and that's where I dovetail then into, okay, how do we get this to work for us? Could you slap together temporary housing quickly while you build the dorm, right? Could you rapidly expand, which is kind of where these tool sets allow us to play right now? Yes. But I think the importance here in my mind is any of those quick wins that allow us to get insights, allow us to get data, et cetera, are only going to serve you when you're also working on the long-term strategy. And that does require these skill sets. It does require these people. Otherwise, you're going to create quite the conundrum where a business unit or many business units, right, are going to start leveraging all these tools and playing in areas that they are not skilled in but do work. You're just going to pay for it in dollars for, you know, for services, as opposed to dollars for somebody who can extend your dollars.
I'm going to set, there's so many good points in this one that you talked about. I had to start writing down like bullet points of like what, how I'm going to respond to it. This is okay. I'll just say this: 7:30 a.m. conversations are good, but man, 10 a.m. for 11 a.m. conversations are way better. Holy smokes.
I'm having a blast, man.
This is great. Okay, so I want to go back to your phrase. You led with just because it's built doesn't mean it's built right. And I would agree with you, right? I have a little bit of hesitation when you say that. And my hesitation comes from there's a balance between value and cost on these things.
Sure.
And so I feel like, to your point, again, going back to the analogy of the school and everything, I agree with a lot of what you're saying. I'm not sure every company has the skills, to your point. I'm not sure every company has the skills day one to build it right every time. And sometimes it's going to be a bit of a road or a progression as you learn, and it'll mature as you go. So one thing is, I think in hindsight, sometimes you look at projects like, I shouldn't have built it that way, or I need a couple more revisions. So I don't think you have to ever, I don't think you have to stop build. I don't want you to feel like you have to stop building just because you don't feel like it's 100% right. So I do think there's an effort of like, sometimes you just need to get going. Now, my point here is because sometimes a company or leadership is not willing to spend the dollars to get the right solution. So sometimes it's I'm in an emergency mode, I need to get stuff done. And I feel like there's a management problem that occurs where, let's just build it. And then to your point, Tommy, earlier, just because you now have a visual person who's now building all the visuals, now that's their visual expertise. Well, the company hasn't taken time to slow down, invest, train them up, and really done a good job. So we get by with what we have, but there's this balance between there's enough value being produced and the cost to produce that solution is reasonable. Now, as you continued talking, Seth, you actually made this point in your conversation. And, you know, my question back to you, well, it may not be built right, but does that really matter? And I think it does. It does matter. But sometimes the suboptimal solution works for a short period of time. And over time, to your point, Seth, the cost of a non-optimal solution will creep up. And at some point, the cost to maintain or the cost to do that suboptimal solution falls over. And the cost, like, why are we spending so much money to do this very little value-added thing? And I think at that point in time, you're now saying, you're stepping back and saying, oh, I need to rethink what we're doing, the process, because the value I'm squeezing out of it is not as much as it should be for that amount of spend. And I think this is where technology changes that discussion, right? If technology never evolved, you would just do it the same way every time and nothing would ever change. You would just do the work and it would be done. And, you know, technology is never making it less expensive in the future. However, we know as technology gets better, it's going to continue to reduce costs for doing more complex, more bigger things, larger amounts of data, all these other stuff. So because the technology has been changing, we're now getting this evolution of we do need to sit back and look at our process and think through, is there better ways of doing things? Are we overspending for the value we're getting from this data, this process, or whatever that thing is? And that's where I see Fabric coming into play here is companies have to really sit back and evaluate and say, wow, I see Fabric as being something that could add a lot more value now than trying to do it all in Azure and all these other things and all this extra effort. So sure. Because Microsoft is changing the tech, I can now sit back and say, what we were doing wasn't good enough. Let's reevaluate. And my only point here is management should just be aware of these things, and technical leaders in these developed solutions should be thinking this way and providing leadership with at least, hey, we think here's some things that we're doing. These couple areas are probably inefficient. I just need you to know about them. They're maybe not a problem right now, but there potentially could be better ways of fixing those things and bringing the cost down that then adds more value. And this is where we go with, like, Tommy, I think a lot of this reminds me of conversations you have with people and clients is we have a central BI team that is unwilling to let self-service happen. There is an unwillingness for me letting other people, hey, here's a data model, go build what you want. The delegation of responsibility to that team. Now, that company may not have the data culture to support that day one. However, it doesn't mean if you spend some time and some effort doing that, maybe there is opportunity for allowing the business to have more designed models for them and letting them build their own reports. We'll maintain the models. Business, you can make your own reports in your own workspaces, publish it how you want. You're responsible. So I think there's a lot of really neat conversation and around this this area. And to go back to these positions, I'm going to bring it back home here, right? These positions, I think, are very much needed. And I think as long as companies understand, they may or may not have all these skills, but it's a progression. You need to know where you're at. And this is why the adoption roadmap I love, because it gives you those scores. How are you with your processes? How are you with your people? How are you with the technology? What have you implemented from a process standpoint? And how does that help you move data around? You can actually score yourself and improve your organization. And that's being self-aware of this is kind of hard.
So I want to take my own kind of, I don't know, rebuttal is not the word, but from the framework that Seth's talking about.
We now bring Tommy to the stand.
Yeah, right. Yeah. I testify that I love what Seth said. There's a lot of unassociated debt with, we can build it and it can look like it's right, but the problems that occurred are, I'm calling them unassociated because, or you're not going to think that they're directly correlated. Ownership. All the knowledge, if I build it one way, is usually going to be with that person and it leaves with that person. Why does that always occur? I think that's always because of the data roles. One person is trying to manage all of this, but I'm actually surprised we haven't taken the first sentence from this article, which to me is, I think, my favorite part of the article and the boldest part. All of this to me is sounding more about the data literacy. And so the sentence is, data roles are often the first subject I discuss when building data literacy.
Yep.
Now, why would he start with that? Well, all the things we're talking about here, and if we go back to our definition of data literacy from the articles we've read and the conversations we had, the ability to talk, read, communicate, and argue with data. Well, with all of these roles and trying to build this framework, one person trying to do this, there's everything still ill-defined. And again, one person can do this, or it can be built in a janky way that looks like it works a lot, looks like it works pretty well. But the problem is all these, how does it get sustained? How is it scalable? How is it delivered? And how is that transfer of knowledge going across the organization? That's where the problem to me, or where that the roles are so important here. Unless you have the clear roles across who's going to be building what, in what capacity, how much resources do we have available to them? That to me is where that true data literacy grows. So that's where I'm going to kind of end my own testament here. But
go ahead, Seth. Do you want to do some? I'm just thinking we're about.
Yeah, yeah.
Final thoughts.
I'll wrap. I'll wrap with my final thoughts here.
Okay.
Yes, I think from a structured post or article, fantastic. Mm-hmm. Yep. He starts with, this is, you know, like a road towards data literacy when I'm having these conversations. Mm-hmm. And the second to the final paragraph is, the key to this analogy is explaining the difficulty as well as uniqueness of each role with kindness and sincerity to your audience. For example, many people can construct a shed, but it takes a different type of expertise to construct a dorm. And I think this comes back towards it is because, and I guess my final thoughts would be this too. Not all companies are going to expand at the same pace. A lot of our conversations are really acceleratory, right? Some orgs will not want to expand or grow more. So the level of effort remains the same for these individuals, right? And it's not expanding into all these skills and they're fine with a shed. They could be fine with a shed and that's fine. But if you're going and moving towards a dorm, right, this is where articulating these things is extremely important. So if you are the person, right, that is unbeknownst to you, all of a sudden the center of fantastic things in the business, the best thing you can do that I think this article points out is start to communicate the level of efforts. Mm. And understand that there are varying expertise and skill sets that people are driving you into, and they are going to take more time. And you need to articulate that they're going to take more time. There are certain skills that, or like methods by which somebody who needs to go like architect the building, right? Otherwise, we're gonna find problems because you building the shed is one thing, and I love that, right?
Technical debt.
Me building the shed is fine.
We can start with a bunch of sheds.
You want a really big shed because at some point,
yep.
Right? When we have 100 students in that giant shed, it's gonna start falling apart, and you're gonna need somebody. You're gonna pay more because it wasn't built right, yep. Right? So over time. I think in expanding solutions, these responsibilities should be different people. And it like the big thing is if you're the person, get your head around these roles, communicate that there are different levels of effort. And as the company expands or grows, the best thing you can do is articulate that these are big deals depending on how fast the business wants to accelerate into the data spaces.
Tom, you got any final thoughts on that one?
That analogy is so good because when you think about the person building a dorm, and really data literacy, I've always thought on the consumer side, but if I build a dorm or a shed, well, have you accounted for how people are going to behave in the dorm? Are you going to account for all the possible mistakes that can happen, the plumbing or just the dumb people in a dorm? But compared to building a shed, while it may look like the same framework, I think too often I've focused on data literacy on our business definitions, on being able to read a report. But man, if we don't have it on the back end, on that flow of that information coming in and being able to structure it correctly, do we really have data literacy from all ends? So that's really my last thought.
My last thought here is I like this article a lot. I think a lot of this, as I look at this, is a leadership challenge. As well, we're looking at this really from a data engineering role, like the tactical, the people who are doing the work. But I think actually this article speaks a lot more towards leaders who are trying to manage an organization. And I can't tell you the number of conversations I've had with people where I see individuals in companies at the worker level doing the work of like all these roles. And so I have a lot of conversations with people who I tell them specifically, you have outgrown the data culture at that company. You know more than they are allowed to let you do. And your understanding of the Power BI platform, and you actually need two things. Either one, you have to go find a company that has a data culture that aligns with your vision of how Power BI is working, which means they do respect more of these roles. They do respect having architects and engineers and separation. They understand that concept. Or you have to wait for the leadership to change their mind or roll over. Those are the two things that happen. You move on, or leadership changes their mind, or the leadership changes, and then you get this, you know, new fresh wind of like, okay, let's actually hire the right people to do this. Because I can't tell you the number of conversations I've had with people who have outgrown their organization because the tooling allows this one. So sometimes it's not a good culture fit. And so I'll just say it that way. I think this is a really good article, but I think this article speaks mostly to leadership to make sure that you're understanding this. And as a leadership, you're continuing to learn about the tools, the tech, and you understand that it's not going to be just one person. You're not, and please don't go out and hire a person that says, I can't tell you the number of resumes I've seen that have all these things on the resume. We want an architect. We want an engineer. I need you to do data science. I need all these things on a single resume. You're going to burn that person out. And that's probably not what your organization really needs. Your organization needs probably multiple roles instead of just that one big role. And I think this is something that's evolving right now. We're going to see this changing over time. All right. Very great conversation. Wow. Lively today. Really good thoughts. I think this is probably one of our better episodes. I really enjoyed this conversation. So thank you very much, Tommy and Seth, for bringing up really good points. And I have copious notes here on this one. So this is great. With that, we really appreciate you listening to this podcast and getting up early or, you know, in the middle of your day, depending where you are in the world. We thank you very much for listening to this, and hopefully you found some value out of us going through just kind of data roles and data culture inside your organization. Hopefully this helps you have conversations with your leadership, or if you are leadership, hopefully you're thinking about these things. Go read the article. Think about how this works in your organization. Our only ask is if you like this content or information, please share it with somebody else. We'd love you to share it on LinkedIn or I guess Twitter/X is now X.com is the formerly now new platform. I can't really know what to call it anymore these days. But please share it if you can. That'd be really helpful. We don't promote the podcast. It's just kind of out there. So we only grow by word of mouth. So if you could do that for us, that would be a great help. Tommy, where else can you find the podcast?
I'm going to Tom Cruise the heck out of this. If you feel the need for speed, you can find us on Apple and Spotify or wherever you get your hot podcasts. Help me help you. Make sure to subscribe and leave a rating. It helps us out a ton. If you can handle the truth, or have a question, idea, or a topic, do you want us to talk about that in work? Dang it. Or do you want a future episode? Over to Power BI tips/podcast, leave your name and a great question. And finally, that is actually the only quote I got. Join us live every Tuesday, Thursday, 7:30 a.m. Central. Join and find us on Twitter, LinkedIn, and YouTube.
I thought you were going to throw some weird Scientology thing at the end there.
Good effort.
Awesome. Thank you very much. We appreciate your time. We thank everyone for listening to the podcast. We'll see you next time.